This is the Horse Radio Network.
Hello, everyone in the horse world. This is producer Jemmy with episode number 551, A Best Of. The gang is out today, so we're rolling things back to July 14th, 2018, when they reviewed their very first ever book of the month, When Two Spines Align by Beth Bomer, with listener Lilla Mason. Also, Reese talked about her adventures in Germany, and they shared a total saddle fit trainer tip on greasing the joints. Listen in.
This is Reese Koffler Stanfield from Georgetown, Kentucky.
And this is Philip Parks from Rockwood, Ontario, and you're listening to the Dressage Radio Show. Hi, Reese.
Hi.
Welcome back.
Hi. Thank you. Yeah, I'm a little sleepy tonight. I'm not going to lie. It's very early in Germany. So I got back last night and I had quite a great trip. It was really, really a special trip. So basically,
let's get to it.
You want
to
hear about it? Yeah.
Like, what are you doing? Why were you there?
So it was actually a little bit of a different trip than I normally take. You know, normally we sort of land and we start horse shopping and we horse shop and go to the hotel and sleep and go back. But actually, so this was, there's some personal and some business. Michael Klemka, my trainer, got married. Michael's been on the show a couple times and he invited me to his wedding. And I have this strict policy. I only have like two friends in Europe. So when I get married, I should go. So I thought, oh, you know, this will be fantastic. So I went over for his wedding, and he married absolutely a beautiful woman. Her name is Rebecca. And I wish them all the best luck. The wedding was great fun. I don't know how weddings work in Canada, but we went to a beautiful
castle.
You do,
because you went to my wedding and you know how that works.
Yeah, but I don't think there's a signing ceremony. They have a signing ceremony. They did it in same in France. Oh, yeah, that's true. I did go to Phil's wedding, but it's very fuzzy. The whole wedding's very fuzzy. but there's a signing ceremony. It was the same in France. Like in America, we just go to the courthouse. Yeah. There's nothing. Yeah. There's not a ceremony involved. Yeah. But there was. So you have the ceremony and then you have the actual, you know, reception. So the signing ceremony was a beautiful kind of castle. I mean, there were like swans and lily pads. I mean, I was like, oh God, this is so pretty. And it was an absolutely gorgeous day. And then we went to a beautiful restaurant they had rented out for the reception. And there was some pretty amazing people at this wedding. I'm not going to lie. I was a little fan struck. So I met Ingrid Klemka, which of course is Michael's sister. And she's awesome. And all the children and Monica Tita Rescue was there and Helen Lange Henneberg was there. I was just a little bit. I was a little bit in awe of the situation, but it was great. And I don't know if you saw, or we haven't talked about it, but the news broke actually that day that there was going to be for the world ranking list that for 6 months, there was basically you would hold your world ranking if you had a baby. And Helen Lange Henneberg had a baby like 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago, something like that. And I actually talked to her about it. I was, okay, I had some wine, so I'm going to go talk to her about this. And I did, and she was so lovely. And she actually said she didn't have much to do with the decision, but she was sort of the poster child for the decision from the FEI. And I thought that was really cool. And I told her that. And so I chatted with her for a few minutes. And she was absolutely adorable and lovely. And it was fun. So that was kind of some news. And then I was also on a scouting trip for the University of Kentucky. I teach a class at the university in the equine management department in the fall. So they have asked me, the university asked me if I would take a group of students to Germany. And so with Dr. Jill Stowe, we went over, we landed and went right to the Herb Springer bit plant, which was super cool because, you know, you wonder like, why do I spend so much money on these bits? Well, I can tell you now why you do. So they're all handmade in the factory and there are 150 people that work in the factory. And of course, in Germany, there's very strict labor laws and how long people can work and what they can do. And so we were met by Martin Springer And Martin literally gave us a tour of the whole factory and how they made it. And he is a fifth generation. His family's been doing this for five generations. So that was absolutely fascinating to hear him discuss, you know, show us the mold, how the bits are made. Every bit is hand stamped multiple times. It's looked at for quality control multiple times. It is spun in, he called them stones, but they were special stones, like in sort of like a huge vat, actually. And every stone is different and every stone has a purpose. And so it was just really cool to hear how they develop bits and why they develop them the way they do. And I have no problem now spending the money I do on the bits because it's absolutely worth it. Yeah, so that was
the quality is there. The engineering is there. The materials that they use is like everything is so
everything.
Precise. Yeah.
And there are, you know, are specific, you know, every station has someone that does a specific thing for the bit and how they mold it and why it's turned the way it's turned. And it's pretty cool. Like that was fascinating to me. I just thought the whole thing was awesome. So, and they showed us also how they make spurs, how they make spurs at Hamspringer and why they make them the way they do and the angles that they make. And then how they make the stirrups. Hamspringer also makes stirrups and why they are the way they are and why they're sort of the best stirrups that you can make. So that was awesome. It was really cool. It was fascinating. And I guess we don't really think about sort of those products and why they're made the way they are. But when you really stop to look at them, it's fascinating. So that was awesome. So then we headed south to Aachen, and actually the horse show Aachen is next week, but we went to the horse show facility. So I now have walked around Aachen and there were no people there. It was about 4:30 on a Friday, but we ended up going to the museum and the museum curator was there and he is 83 years old. His name is Hans and he didn't speak a lick of English. So my German had to come back quick. Yeah.
What's going on there?
Zero English. And you know, my German 20 years ago was quite good when I lived in Germany, but it was great. It was coming back to me and we had just the cutest discussion for about an hour with him about Aachen and about, we heard about his family and his wife and how long he'd worked there for 53 years. So it was pretty cool. And he had just the stories he had. I probably got 70% of what he was saying, but I got the gist. And he showed us the presence wall and they have, you can at the museum there, you can actually get on a replica of the stands, not the podiums. So I won.
Aachen.
I won Aachen. So that was pretty awesome. That was pretty cool. And then we then went to the town of Aachen, which is absolutely beautiful. If you ever get a chance, it's a beautiful, there's a dome. The dome in Aachen is a UNESCO World Heritage Site. So it's worth from the cultural standpoint. And we're mandated in a good way through the university to do 50% culture and 50% horses, which of course, I think horses are our culture, but it doesn't matter. So we have to, you know, find things. And it was also cool because there's an awesome downtown in Aachen. And the World Cup game with Belgium was playing. And so it was just the coolest evening to sort of walk around. And there were so many TVs set up and because it's very close to Belgium. That part of Germany is like 20 kilometers from Belgium. You're essentially almost Belgium. And it was awesome. It was so much fun. So we did that. And then we headed up to Münster for the wedding on Saturday. And we did the wedding and we had a brunch on Sunday. I'm not going to lie. Did see a couple horses Sunday afternoon when I had to do a little horse shopping and then, which wasn't the main mission, but you know, you never know. You got to see some unicorns when you're over there. And we went to Warndorf, which is, we will be able to take the students, I hope, to the Olympic Training Center and to their national federation or the German Federation, which is in Warndorf. And Warndorf is also itself a state stud, which part of what we're doing was sort of learning what the industry is like in Germany and essentially why are they so successful at what they do. So Warndorf is a state stud. And then we actually, the next day, we had dinner in Warndorf, walked around. Warndorf is also a wonderful town. It's a wonderful street that's cobblestone lined. And, you know, it's just a beautiful place to sort of walk around and have dinner. And then in the morning, we actually got up quite early and went up to Verden, which in Sella. And we actually went to Sella first, which is also all these places, if you ever get a chance to go to in Germany, are phenomenal. Sella is also a state stud, and it is one of the oldest ones. And I can't remember exactly the history, but one of the German kings married a royal family from Great Britain. So they had all the carriages there from the British royal family, or some carriages, and we explained on why they were the way they were and how they restore them. And just Sella itself is actually beautiful. And we talked to Dr. Brockman, who is the head of it, and you know, he works with the German government and how to maintain this place and why they maintain it. And they really maintain it for the culture of the horse. And it's similar to what we would say the Kentucky Horse Park is here, which is also a government-run park, you know, educational site, however you want to say it. And that what Sella was. And we actually, they also own stallions, the German government at Sella. And well, and they're actually off the property at a different training facility. So we ended up going there and seeing, and that's where sort of they have people that work there. And, you know, one of the tour guides we had, he'd worked at the state stud for 35 years. So that was his career, was at the state stud. So that was absolutely phenomenal. And you see, you know, why it's important that the German government sort of keeps buying horses for themselves, essentially, which is to keep the breeds alive and keep the heritage alive, if that makes sense. And then we went to Verden, which is, and Phil, you've been there as well. I actually knew where we were because of the picture Phil took. I was like, oh, it's back there. Phil took a picture over there. But yeah. What's interesting about Verden, and Phil, you can chime in because you've been as well, they sell cows there. It's a facility in the town.
Yeah, so, it's agricultural more than just specific horse as well. And, you know, that's where they have the registration offices. Yep. And I think maybe most importantly is the auction site is in Verden, not in Sella, right? It's all Hanoverian breed, but Verden.
Breeders. Yep, in Verden, all Hanoverians. And they have multiple auctions throughout the year. So the Hanoverian breed is very much into giving a marketplace for the horses. So they have different
sales. As a service to the breeders. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they want to make sure that the breeders are going to be able to have a place. So, you know, as an agricultural business rather than, you know, there's a lot of breeders in Canada and North America that are do it as a hobby.
Right.
But very much on the business side in Germany, in Europe in general. I mean, so to make sure that the, you know, a breeder whose only job is to breed a Hanoverian horse, they have to have a place to be able to sell rather than just privately. I mean, that, you know, some
that's
people do that.
That's option Yep, that's yeah, an option.
To do it privately, but the auction house offers a place to sell mares, foals, stallions, you know.
Anything.
And
exactly. They have riders there. Employed there. And the other
part of
the
yeah, part of that service is the training as well. Mm-hmm. So,
yep. If you needed a horse, it was very reasonably priced. I mean, I was actually shocked. And we sort of that's on the other side of the street. We parked there. That's why we were lost. I was on the other side of the street, which was quite a big stable that has trainers, and you can go there. Or if you buy a horse in the auction, the horse can go over there for a little while if it works. Then they also have a show facility, and they have. They were setting up actually for one of their horse shows, and they set up in, there's also like a stadium there, but it's also used by the town for soccer. And so it was just a really cool place where you could see sort of a horse show grounds and.
Yeah. It's integrated use, you know, facility or space grounds. Right. So, I mean, in Europe, you know, space is a premium, right? So, and again, like horses are a little bit more integrated into the culture because they've been at it for much longer than we have, you know, dressage training and breeding and selling of horses. So it's all mixed use, you know, buildings and land, and it really works well. And that's, you know,
yeah,
it's something
really
good to see. I mean, that would be great for your students to, to see how it's, you know, it's not one thing, right?
Exactly. And then for our final, so then we went up to Bremen and spent the night in Bremen. And Bremen is just a beautiful German town. Well, it's more of a city and just, you know, we stayed downtown where all the big buildings were, and they're famous for, oh, the name is escaping me, but it's a It's a statue of like a cow and then a pig, and it's very famous for these.
Oh statue. Yeah, I know what you're talking about now.
So we saw that, and there's this beautiful place called Schnorr, which is all these little German homes. It's really a fascinating place, and it was so much fun. We had a lovely dinner there, and then Jill and I headed to Vecta, which is quite interesting because Vecta is the head of the Oldenburg Society in Germany. So we had a lovely tour at Vecta. They also have a facility there that's an auction house. They do not have a training facility there at Vecta, so which is a little bit different. Verden has a training facility. Vecta does not. So that was something interesting. And then from Vecta, we actually went to Paul Schakmola's. We went to Schakmola, which they have a beautiful tack shop there, not going to lie. But they were having a full show, which was cool. Like, we got to literally see, you know, people bring their trailers, which are the Brendrup trailers. They hook them up, they throw their Maren Foal in, and they go to this full show. And it was on a Tuesday. And it was like, oh, okay, well, we're really far behind. And they were like, there were 150 foals each day. So they were going to show 300 foals, which is just insane. So that was pretty cool to see that. And then we went to the tack shop. And then we ended up our trip at the Vecta State College of Riding, which is a state-sponsored riding school. And it's a riding school for trainers, actually. So that was pretty awesome. So that's actually where the trainers go, because in Germany you have to have a license, and that's how you get your license, which we don't have in Canada or America. We have the certified instructor program in America. Canada, do you have a certified instructor?
About the same thing.
But this is like, you really, really have to go to the school. You have to have this license to be able to teach. So that was pretty awesome. They do have an English speaking class at one point. But you have to ride dressage, you have to jump, and you have to do cross country. So it's sort of an all-around coach, which is pretty cool. So we ended there, and everyone was just so awesome to show us and so proud. And it was really an amazing trip. You know, Dr. Jill Stowe and I, we had a ball. Like, we had so much fun.
Packed quite a bit in there.
That's why I'm exhausted, Phil. Like, I'm not kidding. I'm dying here. I'm so tired. So
that sounds awesome. Maybe some people have some questions about your trip. They want to, you know, send an email or
absolutely. You know. I would love to. Reese@horseradionetwork.com. You know, I always, or you Facebook me, however you wanted to get a hold of me. But it's really, if you get a chance, I mean, we were looking at it from a perspective of teaching students about why Germany's successful. And our trip will actually go into the Netherlands. We just did not have time to go to the Netherlands this trip. So we're going to roll the dice on that when we go. But we'll also see. No, I have good friends in the Netherlands too. So I'm lucky that way. So we'll go there. But if you ever get a chance, you know, or go to the auctions, or the German people are very proud of their horses, as we all are. We all want to talk about horses, and we're very proud of them. But it really is. And Phil, you've also done a very similar trip. You were horse buying, but you went to the same places. And it's just a special thing to do. And you really,
I think it's a little inspiring because there's a lot more history, right? Like,
yes,
to think if you ride a Hanoverian or an Oldenburg or a Westphalian, you know, a horse that it was, you know, is bloodlines about, you know, how much pride and time and effort that so many people have put in to create this horse that you ride or that you have, that it's very special. It's very special feeling.
It's very special. And it's just cool. So, and you know, Jill has a foal that's an Oldenburg, and I mean, we went there and they were so excited to hear that she was a breeder. And it was just really cool. It's a
small world, and it's a community of people who enjoy horses. So I mean, you get that across the world. I think that's awesome. So,
yeah. So it's really cool. Well, I hope everyone enjoys the stories. But again, please feel free to email me anytime. But right after this commercial break, we're going to come into our first, I'm super excited, installment of our book club with Lilla Mason.
This Nutrition Minute is brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products, the company that simplifies your search for research-proven nutritional supplements at kppusa.com.
Commercial Commercial feeds are fortified with nutrients such as proteins, vitamins, and minerals. They are made up of a variety of ingredients that provide a particular amount of energy. Most feeds have been designed to address the needs of a certain type of horse. It is important to understand that all feeds are formulated by nutritionists to be fed in specific amounts. When the correct amount of feed is provided, the horse consumes the appropriate amount of energy and nutrients. The feeding directions included on the feed bag or the feed tag are specific to the particular feed and should be followed. When you feed less than the recommended amount of feed, your horse is not getting the full complement of nutrients that he or she may need. On the other hand, too much of a good thing can also be bad. The overfeeding of concentrates can lead to grain overload and oversupplementation, and feed should never be cut or mixed with other fortified feeds or plain grains because this changes the nutrient profile and can cause imbalances in energy, protein, vitamins, and minerals. If you need to include additional supplements in your horse's diet, choose products that are formulated to complement, not compete with fortified feeds. If you feed a plain grain such as oats, additional fortification may be necessary. Kentucky Performance Products supplements are specifically designed to complement, not compete with the modern concentrates used by today's horse owners. Each supplement is manufactured to exacting standards in certified facilities using stringent quality control guidelines. So choose Kentucky Performance Products supplements because the horse that matters to you matters to them. Learn more about Kentucky Performance Products supplements at kppusa.com. That's kppusa.com.
This Nutritional Minute has been brought to you by Kentucky Performance Products. You can find all of their terrific products at kppusa.com.
Well, tonight I am very excited to have a friend of mine, Lilla Mason. She is an auditor of the Horse Radio Network, and she is our first reviewee, if that's how you say it, of When Two Spines Align, Dressage Dynamic Book Club. Lilla, welcome to the show.
Oh, thanks, Reese. I'm honored to be on it.
Well, you are so cute. We see each other at all the shows, and Lilla is so nice and always has lovely things to say about the show. But you saw me at a horse show a couple weeks ago and said, I'm going to read this book. And I said, this was in the beginning of June. I said, well, great. We need someone to be our first our guinea pig on coming on the show and talking about the book and sort of doing the whole book club program. So I was so happy that we had our first person, number one. But Lilla, tell us about yourself. You're really an amazing writer.
Oh no, I'm just an amateur with an addiction to dressage and a real desire to get my gold medal, but you know, it's a long road and it's a lot of fun. I have a great trainer, Elaine Gabala, and she works with me every day, and you know, that's what it takes. But I'm certainly, you know, just an amateur on that road.
Well, you really do. You work very, very hard at the sport, and that's what's so cool about you. And so, tell us a little bit about. Okay, so you know, this was we were joking a little bit off air. This was actually a pretty technical book for our first book we chose. So tell us some things. It sounds like this book helped you. We had a horse show in June, and there was just a horse show last weekend, and it sounds like you actually got some significant help from this book. So start us off. What were some things that you liked?
Well, I think this isn't a book that you read cover to cover and put away. You know, this is a book that really has a shelf life, and it is technical. But what I realized when I was reading the book, that the things that I kept resonating with me were probably the places that I have holes in my training with myself, my position, and my horse. And so I think that's, you know, the beauty of this book, because I think every time anybody picks it up, they'll be going through the pages or chapters and focus on one of these really technical points. And all of a sudden you're thinking, oh my gosh, you know, that's a big hole for me. Here's these exercises I can do that this book offers. And I'm really going to focus on that. And, you know, I think that's what I discovered in this book. You know, there were a few things that came out at me, just jumped off the page at me. And I thought, oh, you know, that's, you know, a problem. You know, like they were talking about one of the problems I have, I fox hunt 3 days a week in the winter. So my position is always not the best. You know, I have trouble sitting up straight. And the way the author talked about trusting your seat really resonated with me, because I realized the reason I swing my upper body around, it isn't that, you know, I guess it's my way of thinking I'm effective, but if I would trust my seat more, I could smooth that over, you know, and tempi changes and just keep focusing on just trusting my seat instead of, you know, thinking it was ineffective. I think that was really helpful.
Yeah, for sure.
I was going to say the thing that, you know, after I finished the book that really jumped out at me was just the volume of information that was organized in such a good way that you can sort of progress through, you know, progress as I read the book, it progresses through, you know, rider position, then, you know, horse's natural ways of going, and just the breakdown of the explanations of all these things. And then the third part, so I kind of zoomed through the first two parts, you know, like I've read quite a few books on, you know, that talk about the position, and read books, you know, about horses, natural ways of going and that kind of thing. And then comes the third part. And this is where it gets, I don't want to say heavy, but it gets like, this is where the volume of the information about training comes in and was so interesting that it probably took me twice as long to get through the third part of the book that it did for me to get through just the first two parts, which, and I just, you know, kept coming back and, you know, I can see how is it if you buy the book, own the book, read it, like you said, and then like come back to it all the time, because it's like, there's so many great exercises and so much great discussion on the points that I think the first time through, you're never really going to get through it and really, you know, be able to get the full information right away. But I think there's lots of great parts that you might read and then you want to come back to. So I really, yeah, that was awesome about it.
Yeah, I think there were some really specific things that at the last show really helped my scores. And, you know, I felt like this show season, I sort of have a 63% tattooed on my forehead. I can't seem to get up, you know, above that. Yeah.
Break the barrier. That's what I call it. Breaking the barrier.
Sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
And some little details I picked up in this book really got my percentages up a little bit, you know, like using the visual power line. Dressage is so hard because you learn these things and then you go back and you are reminded of it or learn it again or something. You're like, oh, I forgot about that. And yeah. You know, like the visual power line of, yeah. I was in my, you know, not looking all the way down the ring and the half passes, and all of a sudden your haunches are leading because you're looking down at the shoulder.
Yeah.
And I don't know why I didn't remember that from my jumping days. You know, you always look up, and just that simple little thing makes such a difference.
No,
and
it does.
The tempies too. I couldn't figure out why my last two tempies I often missed. And now I realize after reading that chapter, it was my visual power line. Again, I was looking down to get the count at the end. And as the book says, that just puts you on your forehand and then there's a mistake. And so little things like that were really helpful.
Yeah. Well, and I think, you know, the difficult thing about dressage is there is a significant amount of theory. And if you really work with someone who knows the theory, you're getting it, but you don't ever necessarily study it. And that's what, you know, trainers do, is we study theory, or, you know, we have studied theory. And, you know, it's important to know why the theory exists and why your trainer's telling you to do whatever. And I think that this book was really good about, like, hey, this is the theory, and then this is the application that you need for the theory, like the visual power line. Like, there's a reason why we want you to look in the direction you're going, because your shoulders, your hips, and your alignment will actually help you with that. And along with, you know, you were talking about just your seat in general, like trusting your seat. And there's a reason you want to trust your seat, because in the tempi changes, you're using your seat. And that's all it needs to be. We think, and I'm just as guilty, is in the changes, you're like, oh, I'm going to help you. And riders start rocking and rolling and jumping out of the saddle. And that makes it worse. You know, that's just like, stop, you know, don't do that. Just use your seat and just use your leg. And this book was pretty good about, actually, it's one of the best ones that I've seen that they do. So what were some other kind of key things that help you, you know, sort of break in that pre-St. George 63% barrier?
Well, I had never been able to get the canter to trot transition very good at the end of 4-3 and I-1. That's a really hard transition to get right.
Yeah.
And I had learned in a clinic, they'd said, you know, use your hand, you know, how do you get the horse to understand you want him to trot and not, you know, like shorten the canter or walk or something. I was in a clinic and they said, just use your hands without leg. And still, I was always past the letter when I got the trot and it was imbalanced. And then I read here and I said, you know, active, and in this book it said, you know, interrupt the canorhythm with your seat and thighs, and then, you know, follow the movement, you know, with the floor of your seat. And man, I nailed that transition every task.
Yes.
You know, it was just like, oh, finally.
Mm-hmm. After all that is time, a hard transition. You know,
it really is hard. Yeah. And then mm-hmm. that movement, that last movement in 4-3 where you go, you trot at C and then you make two left turns and halt at G. Mm-hmm. Again, that's a difficult, you know, it seems like a simple thing, but boy, you can really lose your shoulders there, you know, turning those, making those, you know, sharp angle turns. And I use that concept that was in the book of turning with the outer triangle. And there's an exercise in that book called the square serpentine exercise. And I practiced mm-hmm. those two things. And I actually got an 8 on that movement in one of my tests.
Yes. That is a really good
again,
movement.
Yeah.
Can you describe that one? Because that was one of the, I really like that one.
Well, you trot at C and you go to S and you turn left, and then you go to I and you turn left, and then down the center line to halt at G.
Mm-hmm. No, so the square serpentine.
Oh.
Can you describe that one? That was a great exercise in this book.
Yeah, it was. It was just three serpentines. And at, you know, using at very straight lines at every angle. And it really, you know, to get the accuracy of it, you know, to get straight again after every turn, it comes up very quickly. It was really a good exercise.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it just returns to, I mean, if you're riding at, you know, Pre-St. George, it's great. But also if you're riding at first level, again, just the volume of exercises and discussion about things that apply to everyone. You know, I think if you're a dressage rider, you're going to get your problems covered in this book.
Yeah.
You know, because she's filled this book with so many tips and exercises that I think, you know, no matter what level or what your problem is, it's probably going to get talked about, and it's probably going to have an exercise to help you correct it. And then as you move up through the levels, you know, next year, you're going to come back to it because you're going to start riding. Like if you're riding first level this year and you're going to go to the second level next year, you know, you're going to work with your trainer or whatever. And then you're going to come back to this book and like, oh, yeah, that's what I do. You know, I have that problem in my countercaner. I have that problem, you know, in this, and return to the book, you know, and just positional things. Right. Maybe you don't have this specific problem right now, but you're going to have, you know, like you might run into you know, a different problem a year from now, and you know, this is gonna talk about it. You know, a few points that I sort of, you know, I jotted down some notes here that like little just expressions and things that really spoke to, you know, to the training and the things I have to tell riders a lot, or just a different way of saying things, is like, I really like this comment, like, you want to use your aids as little as possible but as much as necessary. Mm-hmm. And that was, I think that was just a really cool little sentence that I kind of wrote down. And you know, it ties into another one that I found a little bit later in the book, that many riders ride a lot some of the time instead of riding a little all of the time. You know, so those two things, so for me, we kind of went hand in hand. And I just immediately introduced that to, you know, the lessons that I was teaching, that like, you know, as a trainer, it's really great to be able to find different ways to say something you've already been saying, or you know, just a different way to come at a problem. And so, you know, even if you are a professional rider, just, you know, picking up a book and finding a new exercise here or there, or a new way to talk about a problem, has just been really, really awesome. So immediately I was able to, you know, read a chapter or read a bit here, and then go to, you know, in the evenings. So usually I was reading this book in the middle of the day. So
yeah.
I was able to, you know, go ride my horses
in the
morning,
afternoon,
come home, have lunch, read some of the book, and then in the afternoon I teach lessons. So in the afternoon, go out and start to implement these things right away. So
no, I love it.
It's really good. Yeah,
I thought that their explanation of half halts was the best I've ever. I dwelled on that one.
Yeah, actually, I laugh, Lily, because literally that was my note, too.
Really?
You and I think we're, I like the square serpentine. That was one of mine. And then half halts. And I was actually going to just read it. It's half halts and transitions are the rider's primary tool to balance the horse. They coordinate the front pulling engine and the hind pushing engine by connecting the two engines. And when the half halt and transition transfer weight to the hind leg, they collect the horse. As you work on making your half halts effective, remember to use your power lines, then enable the aids, and they make soft, effective aids. So I felt the same way. Like, I thought that was, I loved sort of the idea of the pulling engine and the pushing engine. That sort of resonated with me. And I was like, oh, that's such a good way to think of those two. And the half halt is balancing, but it's connecting those two engines, which I thought was cool. That was one of the things for me that was super effective. And
yeah. And the part about the horse, I don't know why I never thought about this way. You know, it's so annoying when a horse won't engage his hind end.
Yeah.
It never occurred to me that he's not, as this book explains, a horse isn't really aware of his hind end because mm-hmm. he doesn't, you know, he just pulls himself. And it, I just never thought of it that way. I just thought they just didn't want to work real hard. It just, it makes it me feel like being a kinder rider, because now I understand that, you know, you need to wake up the hind end because he's just not, doesn't really know it's there. I mean, knows it's there, but, you know, it's just sort of a caboose. And
yeah. I mean, again, yeah, a good discussion about, like, horses in nature and what is their nature and, you know, how are we supposed to teach them and influence these things? You know, and it talked about horses of different types and, you know, there was a lot of, you know, and some that are, you know, bred with a little bit more natural inclination to use the hind end or, you know, their you know, the conformation, the breeding, a little, there was a little discussion on that. And I thought that was really valuable. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, it wasn't just like, this point applies to all horses. It was a little bit like most horses are like this. Some of them are like that. And, you know, that because as a trainer and as a coach, you know, not all things apply to every horse, right? Not all horses are crooked to the right, for instance. So there was a little, you know, some good discussion about that and, you know, and about what, you know, what, like you said, is the nature of the horse and how do we explain to them, because that's, you know, that's what we're trying to do with dressage, is using our aids, because we can't just, you know, talk to them and tell them. So we have to be, like you said, kind about it. And, you know, we're using the exercises to explain to the horse. And as a rider, you're responsible for being clear and accurate with your aids. Right. So, and again, this, another note I made is like a well-timed aid is one where the horse is physically able to respond. And, you know, this kind of falls into a lot of my lessons where, like, yes, you can apply the right aid, but you may not get the right reaction because you were either, you know, most of the time a little too slow to influence the horse, or a little bit too fast, right? So, again, you know, I think this book really speaks to the problems of an adult amateur.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Well, yeah. I mean, well, and just in general, I think, like you were saying too, Phil, like, as a trainer, these are really good things. Like, for example, she talks about four primary power lines, which I thought was cool. She talks about the vertical power line, which is the line from your ear, shoulder, hip to your heel. The connecting power line, which is your elbow, your low back that connects the horse and the rider. The spiral power line, that is, this is the vertical line spiral to help the rider steer through a turn. And she talks about each of these, and then the visual power line that Lily, you've talked about, which is that the rider focuses on an object. And just even those four things, if you can do those four things, then you're in pretty good shape. You know, if you can sort of connect all of those things, they're very technical things. And I think that they were really fantastic. So Lily, just kind of as a final thought, what was your sort of overall your favorite takeaway from the book?
Oh, I think, you know, the explanation of the horse's balance and the explanation of half halts, because I think half halts are just the basis of everything. And for an amateur rider, and, you know, you all are trainers, and it's so hard to teach feel, and a half halt is all feel. And to write it down on paper and read it, and they had so many exercises about how to develop, you know, better half halts and what to do if they don't go through and blah, blah, blah. And, you know, that just was really, really helpful to me. You know, I have so much respect for you and Philip and Elaine and all the people that try to teach dressage, because I don't know how you do it. It's just so complicated.
And, it's a lot of fun, actually. But you know, it is nice, and I have found, and that's one of the reasons I thought this book club idea was cool, because some writers, everyone learns a little differently, and I don't have a lot of space in my apartment, so a lot of my horse books are in my tack room, and so my students can sort of check them out and bring them back, because some writers learn beautifully from reading. Some just love reading. And then other writers, they'll learn from different forms. You know, so I feel that the book club helps writers that want to read, or basically just helps educate, in this case, a little bit about theory. And like, why do we say the things we say? Like, we say them because there is a basis for them. So, but I am so glad you enjoyed the book.
I was just going to jump in there, Reese. I think even if people, you know, aren't big readers or don't like to read, I'm thinking of some of the teenage writers and like, you know, pick up a book like this and just read it slowly, or, you know, come home from a lesson and try and find a section that relates to what your coach was trying to tell you, because it's worth, you know, I think it's, you know, there's not wasted time when you're trying to learn about dressage. So if watching the video is good, you know, like, do it.
Yes.
You know, and then say, oh, I don't learn well from that. But just do it anyways.
Give it a try.
Everything you can do, because not every rider gets to ride 5 horses a day and, you know, gets that kind of experience. So if anything else just helps a connection or something to click for you, it's worth doing, you know, even if, you know, right at this moment, this doesn't, you know, it doesn't help. You know, keep going back to books and keep going to watching videos and doing everything you can to educate yourself.
Yeah, I love it. Well, in our book club, kind of helps motivate, huh, Lila? Just kind of like, let's do it.
It's such a great service what you and you all are doing, because I know that you're going to be very thoughtful, and as podcast hosts and teachers and educators, the books that you select are going to be really, really good ones. And I just can't wait to read the rest of them, the next one.
Well, I love it. Well, so I talked about it last week with Jacques Ballou, who is also the author of 101 Dressage Exercises, which I've talked about on the show. I love that book. But she's come out with a new book, which is a little bit different than the first book that we chose. So this is 55 Corrective Exercises for Horses. So this is for our listeners that are also doing other disciplines. This book, I think everyone will really enjoy. Phil and I, it just came in the mail. I just picked it up last night. And I hope everyone really likes it. And I think it will be.
I think we're going to try and do a little variety of things, not just, you know, complete.
Well, it won't be all theory books. But I hope everyone likes this book. So pick it up. We've got it on our website and we've got it on the Facebook page. And I hope everyone enjoys this book as well. But Lila, thanks so much for coming on and being our first demo, our first person to talk about our book, When Two Spines Align, Dressage Dynamics by Beth Baumert. And that was book club book number one. So thank you for coming on.
You're very welcome.
Hi, this is April, one of your Texas HRN auditors. If you love HRN as much as I do, you should become an auditor too. I love all the shows, Horses in the Morning, Dressage Radio Show, and many more. I love getting to know the crew and other auditors on the Facebook page and trying and reviewing all the new products. Most of all, I love that my contribution can continue to bring great information, laughs, and more horse-centric programming to others. So what are you waiting for? Go join.
To become an HRN auditor and to join the party, please visit horseradionetwork.com and click on the auditor banner on the right side of the page. For as little as $1 a month, you too can join the party.
Well, Phil, I don't know how you're using those total saddle fit girths, but I tell you what, those interchangeable linings on the total saddle fit stretch tech is a lifesaver for me right now.
It's absolutely. Well, actually, we were just thinking about on Monday, we have to change. We're going to a show, so I'm going to switch our normal, you know, our neoprene stuff for the nice show leather.
Yes.
Stuff, you know, I mean, it looks nicer. It's not, you know, as worn, but I mean, that's nice because they sort of stay off to the side while we're training. And then all of a sudden, showtime, you know,
it's coming out.
Yeah, the really nice leather stuff is coming out. We're, you know, you give it a clean and a little bit of a condition, and they're ready to go for the show. So leather stuff never, you know, looks raggedy. It's all, you know, if you give the outside a clean, it's a brand new, and then you just, It's got that Velcro switch out, takes 2 seconds. It's amazing. So I'm really loving that. You know, as we're preparing to go to another big horse show, I love my shoulder relief girths, and the horses love them too. This is a really great product.
I agree. So as always, Justin at Total Saddle Fit's the way to go. And you can find out at totalsaddlefit.com.
This week's dressage training tip is brought to you by Total Saddle Fit, home of the shoulder relief girth, at totalsaddlefit.com.
So, Phil, you've got a great Total Saddle Fit tip of the week. What you got for us?
Well, we got another listener question. We want to get to these and get the people some answers to their problems as they're, you know, training over the summer here and riding every day. This one is about a 17-year-old Hanoverian mare is sticky about moving freely forward, especially at the beginning of a ride. She often gives a tepid response to leg and seat aids and sort of dawdles at the walk and trot. Hard to keep going at the canter. Sounds like a horse that's just a little bit behind the leg aids. Her gaits are lovely when she does move out. Lots of other, you know, checking tack, checking chiropractic. I think this rider has, you know, done everything she can about the tack and the veterinary issues. We're just sort of, I think we're addressing a bit of a training issue.
Yeah.
Here it's a nice FEI horse. It sounds like a wonderful horse, but it can be a little sticky.
Mm-hmm. Any thoughts right away about this problem? Well, it's funny. I was just working with a team right before, you know, I came in, and I've worked with this horse now a little bit, so I know the horse and I know the rider. And the horse can also be a little bit sticky like that. It's an older horse. It's an event horse.
Yeah.
So it's interesting. I did not come up with it. With this analogy, Scott Hassler did, but I'm going to use it, which he used it with me once, and I thought, this is a great analogy. So
Well, you gave him credit, so he can't say anything, right?
But what he said was, you know, think about an ice in a hose in the winter, and you have to break the ice to get the water to run freely through the hose. And use that same thought with a horse's back. There's tension somewhere in the back, and you have to figure out a way to sort of massage or break, loosen up, if you want to use that term, sort of the tension in their back so the energy can run freely forward. And I was sitting there. I'm like, that is genius. I did not come up with that. I was like, that is really smart. And it's true. And I think with older horses especially.
Yeah, well, I don't think you want to get, you know, sometimes with a frozen line, you might get a, you know, a hammer or something. So, we don't want to do that with a horse.
I live in Kentucky. I do not live in Canada. Yeah, we don't need to use hammers.
You are kind of just bending this hose.
Yeah, we can just bend
this. In Canada, sometimes we use stronger methods. But
yes, I don't know about
Canadians. I get the idea.
Get my visual here. Yeah, exactly. Which is basically like, and I think that's what's going on with this horse. You know, I think she's got some tension in her back. And you know, she's a little bit on the older side at 17. And I am not judging because I'm feeling this as I get older. You know, I have to do more sort of yoga work and more stretching work to feel sort of ready to start the day. And I like to think with older horses and ones that don't want to move forward, they are communicating something to us. We may not like what they're communicating, but they are communicating something, which is, hey, I've got some tension in my back, or I've got some tension somewhere. So, and this kind of goes back to the lesson I was teaching right before the show, you know, I like to do a lot of walk work with these horses. And I think you have to kind of find the key that helps your horse the most. I'm not a big lunger on older horses, but sometimes I have a horse that gets tight in his back and he goes on the lunge line a couple rounds sometimes if he's super tight. And that sort of, as soon as he blows his nose and goes through his back, then he can move freely forward. So that's one option. The option is also just a lot of walk work with a lot of suppling lines. That can be serpentine loops, bending lines, where you sort of make the inside of the horse's neck shorter and the outside longer, just as an exercise to sort of supple that horse laterally. And also just some leg yielding, shoulder four, turn on the forehand. All of these exercises, I think, would help this horse kind of get the ice out of her hose, if that makes sense, to help the energy run forward. Yep. So, Phil, what are you thinking?
I mean, exactly the same way. I've dealt with a couple of schoolmasters in my time, and they just take longer. I think what the rider sometimes wants to do is just think, oh, my problem is forward. I'm just going to make the horse go forward. And then you kind of run into the problem because you're not addressing the suppleness issue. I kind of picture when I ride a horse like this is that pelvis is a little locked up, you know? I think in general, that's my feeling of that kind of horse is that, the front end works fine, but the back end not really, takes a little longer. And so, I don't mind if a rider wants to jog the horse in hand a little bit before they get on.
Sometimes it's
a little better than lunging. You don't want to be creating a circle, just sort of like, are you awake? Are we ready to work? Yeah. And then get on. And for sure, a lot of walk. Leg yield is probably my favorite to fix this problem because it's not as hard as there's less weight carrying in a leg yield than a travers or a shoulder in. So it's just sort of, a little bit with all my horses, I sort of start them, when I'm warming up, and I start them as if they were a first level horse. And then I go, okay, I got that, so leg yield or like, and then, okay, now you're a second level horse. I want to do a little shoulder in, and then I want to do a little travers. And then now you're a third level horse. Maybe I'm going to introduce. So I'm just, kind of going through the checklist of the training levels, also the, the pyramid, rhythm, suppleness, contact, straightness. Yeah. But also, kind of like I'm going to train through the level with this horse, because if leg yield doesn't work, guess what? Shoulder in's not going to work. Travers is not going to work. And if that stuff doesn't work, then half pass is not going to work. So even though it's a schoolmaster and you're like, well, this horse knows half passing, but I just sort of take them through that gently, with a bit of a long neck and, not pulling on the bridle and asking for super collection, because part of the problem is the suppleness of the pelvis and the spine and the shoulder, all that. And another problem is like, you can't make them carry themselves too early or start to weight bear on, because a FEI horse is trained to carry a lot of weight on the hind leg. But if it's not supple enough, then don't do that, right? Because you're going to come into problems, right? You're going to say, okay, 10 minutes later, I'm into my pre-St. George work. Well, yeah, but have you checked that the second level work is okay?
It works,
without creating that super collection. Or so I want to get away from the idea of early in the ride going big stride, small stride, big time weight bearing and then big time making big strides that, because that's, the horse isn't really ready for that in its daily work. And that puts a lot of weight and strain on an older horse to be able to, to go right to a super collection. And that's really hard work. But leg yield, that's, that should be fairly easy. And if you leave a little bit of the balance on the forehand for, 5 minutes, I think you can then, pick them up a little bit better and then start asking for collection when you feel that their body is ready and the energy is right and the forward flow is established. Hopefully that kind of makes sense.
I think that's right.
Some days, I don't get to the FEI work because the horse just doesn't feel good enough.
Ready. Yeah.
It's ready. So great. That's a day where you're focusing on the basics. That's just as important as the rest of the stuff. You can't build on your pyramid if the base isn't there.
Yeah.
Daily. Yeah. Not just
daily.
Daily,
Yeah.
So that's what I try and really ask myself, is the horse ready for the next step? Yes or no? How good does it feel? And if it doesn't feel good, then don't go on.
Yeah,
sort of my idea, my philosophy around these schoolmasters, that you don't have to do lines of tempis every day. You don't have to do twos and pirouettes. You'd like to, but they can.
Yeah, exactly. And I think, when I was when I lived in Germany, now it's a long time ago, but that was one of the things Mr. Schumacher taught us every day was you've got to come out and grease the joints. And I thought
that's a good way to put it too. Yeah.
Grease the joints. Yeah. You've got to spend 20 minutes. There's no bigger pet peeve of mine than I see riders put their foot in the stirrups and they start trotting. I'm like, you have no idea what you're doing. You can do that.
Yeah,
but
just think about it a little bit. Yeah. Spend the time to stretch a little bit. I know that lots of riders We'll do stretch exercises, you know, treat training a little bit with, mm-hmm. with the horse yeah. before they even get on, right? Like,
right.
you know, can they bend their neck around? You know, can they reach a carrot or I use sugar cubes at home? Sugar, you know, to the right mm-hmm. side, to the left side, to, you know, between the front leg. There's all sorts of things that you have to do to prepare the horse to be ready to be, you know, ridden in exercise. And, you know, I think older riders have a little bit better concept of this. Lots of teenagers, you know, get a nice schoolmaster, which is great, but they don't understand the idea of like, you know, of a stiff feeling when they come out of, you know, when they come out in the morning
bar.
You know, how to prepare themselves to stretch and, you know, do all these things. So I hope that helps. I think this is exactly what we're talking about with this horse. It's hard to tell sometimes, but
for sure. Yeah. But as always, we love emails and Facebook shout outs and questions.
We love the questions. I mean, if there's a follow up to any of our, you know, questions that we answer, or if somebody has a little different take on it, you know, shoot us an email. We'd love to address it and talk about it. I think that'd be great.
Absolutely. Well, just as a reminder for our book club next month, we have Jacques Ballou's 55 Corrective Exercises for Horses. And you can find it on Amazon or we'll put it on our website as well. And we look forward to sharing that book with you. And this book's actually kind of along the same lines of what we were just talking about. It's just like,
I was thinking of that as we were talking about it. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Some on the ground and riding exercises to help with the horse.
Yeah, preventing injury. So I love it. Well, as always, you can find our show notes and links to today's guests on our website, dressageradio.com. Like us on Facebook, just search Dressage Radio Show. Follow us on Twitter at Horse Radio. My website is maplecrestfarmky.com, and my email is reese@horseradionetwork.com.
I think the best way to find me is on Facebook, or my email is philip@horseradionetwork.com. I'd like to thank our sponsors this week for allowing us to put on a good show. And don't forget to check out all the other shows on the Horse Radio Network at horseradionetwork.com.
Everybody, keep your heels down and your shoulders back, and we'll talk to you next week.